Guard.
Who, Morgan? He's married.
No silly that. You said he's a big guy. Is he cute?
The question had nothing to do with the current conversation as far as Jess was concerned.
What? No, I don't know. That's not the point.
Mary started to giggle.
Come on, girl. Don't act like you wouldn't like a man.
Jess was still trying to bring Mary back to the point at hand when a voice asked,
Are these seats taken?
Mary and Jess looked up to see two women standing there with a small child. They were the women from last night, the ones from Morgan's neighborhood. Before Jess could say anything, Mary replied,
No, please have a seat.
Jess looked at Mary wide-eyed, shaking her head slightly. Mary was clueless to her objection and simply wrinkled her eyebrows in response. The two ladies smiled and took a seat. The little girl was cute. She had long blonde hair tied back in a ponytail, just like her mother. The child grabbed a corn muffin before her hind end landed on the bench.
She looks hungry, Mary said with a smile.
The woman smiled back. Chloe's always hungry. Mary nodded sympathetically. Aren't we all? The group ate in silence. Jess looked at the little girl, who was eating grits with a spoon that was too big for her small mouth. She marveled at how the little girl eating the pasty, tasteless grits without complaint. Then she considered that hunger was a powerful motivator. With that thought in mind, she ate her own grits and muffin. She almost couldn't stand it, though, sitting beside these women. She wanted so badly to talk to them about Morgan, but she didn't want to act too interested. Fidgeting with her muffin, she asked,
Where are you from?
The two ladies immediately began to talk at once. They laughed. Then one of them continued,
We just live down the road here, a few miles to the south.
Where are you from? She had black, oily-looking hair and a sunken face.
I'm from just south of Gainesville.
Mary here lived in Gainesville. I'm Jess, by the way. The blonde-haired woman replied,
I'm Donna. This is Maggie, and you already know who Chloe is, she said with a smile.
Jess nodded her head and smiled. What made you come here?
It just got too hard to stay at home. There was no food, no water, and raiders were coming through. It was really horrible. What made you come? Maggie said.
For me, it was simple. Gainesville was not the place to be. Mary paused and looked at her plate.
You can't imagine, she added in a quiet voice. You poor thing, I'm so sorry. People can be horrible.
No one wants to help anyone. They're just out for themselves, Donna said, shaking her head. Mary looked up.
They weren't just out for themselves. They were out to take advantage of the situation. Someone not helping me was the least of my worries. You couldn't trust anyone. It's like everyone turned into a predator.
Jess sat there for a moment, trying to decide just how far to take this.
I met some good people. They helped me get home. I guess some people were prepared for this kind of thing.
Yeah, we know some that were prepared, Donna said, looking at Maggie with an eye roll.
Yeah, they were prepared, but wouldn't help anybody. They were just selfish, Maggie said.
That's a shame. Did they stick it out at home, then? Jess asked. She was hungry for information. Before the conversation could go any further, one of the camp staff stepped into the tent.
Breakfast is over. Assemble in your work groups. Your team leader has your assignments for the day.
They got up and moved along. Jess had a crazy feeling in her gut. She just knew it was Morgan and the guys that Donna and Maggie were talking about so dismissively. As they went through the line, turning in their trays, Jess whispered in Mary's ear,
I want to find out if they know where Morgan is. If he and Thad are nearby, we can go there.
Mary cocked her head to the side.
If we can get out of here.
Oh, I'll find a way, Jess said, with a devious look on her face.
Chapter 6
The next morning, I was up early. Mel got up with me and prepared a breakfast of egg and sausage burritos. I was sitting at the table eating, sipping on some coffee, when I thought about the tortilla press that had made this breakfast possible. We bought it at a thrift store. It was a novelty at the time, but those $5 were really paying off now. It's funny how we come to appreciate these little luxuries. Finishing my burritos, I filled my coffee once more and went to wake the girls. They were going to help today as well. While they had their breakfast, I went out and started the old Suburban, giving it some time to warm up. I was going to take it to Danny's house and connect his trailer. He had a lot of material we were going to take. The logistics of this were more than I could keep track of. Thankfully, Danny has a head for this kind of thing. By the time I went back in, the girls were done eating and were getting some coffee. I told them to hurry up. Today was going to be a busy day. Danny already had the gate open and the trailer connected by the time we pulled up. He was on his knees, fussing about the location of the light plug in the truck, griping that the pigtail from the trailer wouldn't be long enough. I laughed at him. "Don't worry, dude. I don't think the troopers are going to be out in force." He smiled. "Guess you're right." This first trip was going to be basic material: pipe, lumber, hardware, plastic sheeting, and tools. We would be moving some food supplies as well, because two guys were going to be staying there after today. We couldn't leave everything unguarded. Ted came by to help, but even with him and the girls helping, it took a couple of hours to load everything that was selected for this trip. Danny was surveying the vehicles, running through the checklist. "Everything's here, but we still have room," he said. "Might as well load the kayaks. There's no sense in leaving them here. They're going to have to go at some point," he said. "Let's take all those fishing rods, too," Ted said, pointing into one of the sheds. "Yeah, we'll get mine later, too," I said. Little Bit came out of one of the sheds, carrying some inner tubes and pool floats. "Daddy, can we take these, too?" I looked at her and smiled. "Sure thing, girlie. Load 'em up." The more we loaded, the more we found to load. Lanterns, camp stoves, camp toilets, Coleman fuel, camp chairs, and tents kept getting uncovered in Danny's buildings. Ted's eye was constantly wandering over the contents of the sheds, and every time I looked up, one of the girls was carrying something else over. Even Leanne was helping out, carrying what she could. Doc had cleared her to be off the crutches, but had warned her not to overdo it. Danny was taking a tackle box out of his bass boat when Ted walked up and slapped the side of the boat. "Does this thing run?" "Don't know. Haven't tried it since the shit hit the fan," Danny said. "Where's the key?" Ted asked as he felt around the console. "In the house. I'll go get it." He headed for the back door. "You think it'll run?" I asked Ted.
"It's worth a shot to check. Could be a big help."
I looked at the boat. "Yeah. It opened up the entire St. John's to us." Danny came back a few minutes later with the key and asked me to prime the fuel tank. I pumped it up, and he opened the choke and turned the key. The engine spun, coughed, and started. Danny immediately shut it down. Ted smiled.
"Well, isn't that nice?"
With everything we needed and more loaded up, we all headed for the various rides. Mel and the girls would ride with me, Danny and Bobby would take their Polaris, and Ted was in the smaller of Sarge's two buggies. As they went around to get in the driver's seat, Taylor asked if she could drive. In the old days, I often let her drive down the dirt road, even though she didn't have a license yet. Sadly, now she never would. "Sorry, kiddo, not this time. Pulling this trailer is going to be tricky." She put on her best teenage pout and got in the back, then said, "Well, I don't want to be dropped off at home. I'm going with you guys to the cabins. I want to see them." I looked at Mel, and she raised her eyebrows at me. I agreed to Taylor's request, which naturally meant that Little Bit demanded to go too. Leanne wasn't interested, so long as there was an iPad at the house. I parked the truck and trailer in the grass in front of Reggie's. Sarge and a couple of the guys walked up as I got out.
"For Pete's sake, did you leave anything behind?"
Sarge asked, shaking his head.
"Yeah, actually, but we'll get the rest of it on the next trip," Ted answered.
I looked back at the trailer, which was mounded full of stuff.
"Well, this might have taken longer than I thought, but those kayaks will be nice to have," Sarge said, rubbing his chin. Wait till we get the bass boat down there, Ted said.
The old man raised his eyebrows and looked at Danny.
You got a running boat?
Yeah, we checked it. Started right up, Danny said.
Hot damn, we're in business now. Let's get this show on the road,
Sarge said animatedly.
How about you? Your trailer ready to go? I asked.
Yeah, but there's still some room. Let's go by your place and load up some more stuff.
Everyone piled back into the various vehicles, and we headed down the road to the house.
You sure this is a good idea, moving all this stuff? Danny asked me, once I got out.
Mel gave me a sideways glance. I looked at both of them.
Can't hurt. Having everything in one place is a bad idea. There'll be guys down there to watch it, so it should be safe. And if we have to bug out, we'll have a place to go.
I guess. I don't really like it, though, Danny said.
It'll be all right. We're just taking precautions.
I hope that's all they are, Mel said.
Bobby nodded with her.
Let's go up back and see what the hell they're doing, I said, as I started to walk away.
By the time we got back to my shop, Sarge and company were hard at work.
You taking my radio? And here I thought it was a gift.
Ah, dry up, Nancy. We need it down at the creek so we have comms back here.
He looked over his shoulder at the buckets of beans and rice.
Load some of them up, too.
It didn't take long to load up Sarge's buggy and trailer. We talked for a bit about security for both locations. While the new supply cache would need security, we would still need enough here to protect our place as well. In the end, it was agreed that Mike and Jeff would move out to the new place. For the trip out, we were taking both of Sarge's buggies and the truck. The smaller of the two would stay there with the guys, giving them a way to move around. Mike and Jeff would have a radio as well.
Sarge, you're forgetting one thing. We need to get a couple of batteries and at least one panel up there as well, so they can run the radio, I said.
Damn right, I almost forgot. You have some you can spare?
Yeah, follow me.
Sarge went with me into the shop, where I pulled out two spare lead-acid batteries, my Dire Straits emergency batteries. They were stored dry, with the electrolyte kept separate. On the way out, Sarge grabbed one of the kerosene heaters and a couple 5-gallon cans of fuel. It'd be the only way to heat the cabin. We decided that Sarge would drive his buggy. Mike and Jeff would take the other, and I would drive the truck with Taylor and Doc riding along. Everyone else was going to stay behind to get some more work done. With everyone settled in, we headed out.
Chapter 7 Jess and Mary were standing outside, waiting for everyone to get an order for roll call. The team leader would call out their names, and they had to respond with their ID number from their badge. As the roll call was being taken, Jess noticed the two women from breakfast were in their line as well. When Donna's name was called, Jess saw her lift up her ID badge to get the number, reading from it in a halting manner.
Ma'am, the child must go to the daycare tent. She cannot accompany you on the work detail, said Singer sternly, in a voice with more authority than the situation required.
Donna pulled the little girl close to her.
Do I really have to do this? Be separated from her?
The team leader looked at the two-man security detail to her left.
Can you deal with this? I don't have time for this kind of shit today.
The two men walked down the line to where Donna was standing and attended to their task with no more emotion than taking out the trash. The lead man took the child by the hand and gently pulled her toward him. Donna pulled Chloe back and cried out,
"Don't take her from me! She's all I've got! You've already taken my husband away!"
"Ma'am, the child must go to the daycare tent. She'll be fine there," the security man said.
The second man quietly added, "Don't make this harder than it has to be." Through all this, the little girl was silent, simply staring down at the ground. Donna began to cry.
"Please don't take her away. Where's she going? What are you going to do?"
Jess had the teeniest feeling of satisfaction watching the lady plead, knowing she had been judgmental of Morgan and Thad. Suddenly, Mary jumped out of line and walked up to Donna and the two men.
"Donna, it's okay. They have class and playtime. She'll get snacks and a nap if she needs it. It really is fine."
Donna looked up at her.
"Are you sure?"
"Yeah. I worked in there a few weeks back. There's lots of kids in there. She'll probably end up making friends."
Mary smiled at little Chloe.
"Back in line," one of the security men said, and pushed Mary away.
Mary glared at the man, but didn't say anything. She knew if she said anything, his reaction could get much worse. As Mary returned to her place in the line, Singer passed her, giving her a disapproving look.
"One of you escort the lady to the daycare tent, then bring her out to our work area."
She paused and looked at Donna.
"There will be no more of this in the future, you understand?"
Donna nodded.
"Do not take my kindness as weakness, or I assure you, you will be very sorry. Got it?"
One of the men led Donna and the child away as Singer and the other security man headed for the front of the line. Once at the front, she spun to face the line of women and looked at her watch.
"All right, ladies. We've already wasted 15 minutes here. It's coming out of your lunch break. We've got wood to cut if you want to stay warm tonight."
While she was speaking, Jess tugged on Mary's sleeve and hissed,
"What are you thinking? You're going to get yourself in trouble."
Before she could answer, Singer called out,
"I'm sorry, ladies. Am I interrupting you?"
Mary and Jess quickly stood to attention. Singer stopped in front of them, crossing her arms over her chest.
"I'm sorry, you were saying?"
Neither Mary or Jess responded. The woman made a show of lifting their badges to look at them, saying their names out loud.
"Are you two going to give me any trouble today, Mary? How about you, Jess?"
She practically spat the words out. Almost in unison, they replied,
"No, ma'am. That's what I thought."
She looked toward the front of the line. "Move out!" The work area for the day was on the western side of the camp on a small hill. Jess and Mary were working together to cut logs into stove lengths. Since fuel was in short supply and manpower wasn't, they were working on a cross-cut saw back and forth. The logs were cut with chainsaws, then carried by several women to the crude set of buckets made from logs lashed together. While some would think the chainsaw would be easier to use, felling trees was hard work. It was made even more difficult by the fact that the saw was connected to an anchor screwed into the ground with a length of steel cable. The screw was turned into the ground by sticking a log bar through the eye and simply walking in a circle. Once the anchor was in, a 20-foot cable would be connected, allowing the operator to move around the work area. Mary and Jess's saw was connected to the saw bucks by a cable, adding to the difficulty of getting into a rhythm when cutting. The secret to using one of these was that one person pulls their way, then the other person pulls back to them. You could not push. Though it seemed like a simple concept, it took time to work out. Jess was pulling and Mary was pushing, but it wasn't moving. While it was still cool out, both of them were sweating from the effort. Mary's teeth were clenched.
"We should have gotten on the chainsaw.
It shouldn't be this hard. Look at them, they're doing it," Jess said,
jutting her chin toward the other two women, cutting lengths. Mary looked over, still pushing on the saw.
"What are they doing differently?"
As they watched the other two women, Singer walked up.
"Is this all you've done so far?"
she snarled, pointing to the two pieces lying in front of the saw bucks.
"We're trying, but the saw is stuck," Jess said.
"Well, if your friend would stop pushing, the saw would move, geniuses. It's simple." Mary let up, and Jess jerked the saw through the log. At the end of the stroke, the saw stopped. The team leader pointed at Mary, as if talking to a toddler. She said, "Now you pull it." Mary pulled the saw back through the log. Jess held on to her end of the saw and let it slide through the log.
"Got it now?"
Neither of them answered. They simply kept working the saw.
"Good. Now speed up,"
the team leader said as she walked away.
I'd like to shove that clipboard up her ass, Jess muttered.
At lunchtime, a side-by-side ATV pulled up to the work area with two kitchen workers. In the bed was a stack of trays. This was how most meals were served, on heavy, molded, detention-grade food trays. As each woman approached the ATV, she was handed a tray and a cup. Her ID badge was scanned with a small PDA-type device before she was allowed to find a place in the sand to sit and eat. The lunch was a serving of beans, some sort of cooked greens, and a handful of dried apples. To wash it down was some sort of purple drink. Jess took a drink from the cup and made a sour face. Mary saw her and started to laugh.
"What, you don't like grape drink?" Mary asked.
"Drank?"
"Yeah. In the hood they call it grape drank. There's also orange drank and red drank," Mary said with a smile. Jess shook her head.
"Who are you trying to kid? You're not from the hood." She laughed as she choked down the rest of the beverage.
"Hey, you lived on campus. There's some rough dorms there."
Jess laughed at that one, too. "Maybe at University of Florida, but at FSU, we didn't have any hood dorms, or drank, for that matter." Mary laughed as she tried to swallow a bite of the greens. Jess stretched her legs out and leaned back in her hands, staring out into the distance. From the small hill they were on, they could see over most of the camp. Mary finished her lunch and said, "What are you thinking about?"
"Nothing, everything."
She sat there gazing off. "Did you ever imagine anything like this? That your life would end up like this?"
"What, with the world coming to an end?"
Jess rocked her feet back and forth.
"It didn't come to an end, not in the way that I was taught in Sunday school, anyway.
But I guess it is an end, sort of."
Mary laughed.
"Yeah, there ain't no fire and brimstone, but it's the end.
It doesn't have to be. But we could see it as a new beginning."
The corners of her mouth dropped, and her expression changed. "We weren't here, being treated like slaves."
"Slaves? We ain't picking cotton."
Jess looked over. "Are you free to leave? Can you go to the bathroom without having to ask for permission? We can't do anything for ourselves. We're forced to work with no say in what happens. If we aren't slaves, then what are we?"
Their conversation was cut short by the team leader.
"All right, ladies, lunch is over."
"I told you it'd be short. You can thank your friend for that,"
the team leader shouted, looking over at Donna. Mary groaned.
"Ready for that saw?"
Chapter 8. We turned onto the paved road and headed toward Altoona. Sarge was hauling ass, and we were up to 55 in no time. Taylor had her hand stuck out the window, surfing it in the rushing air. I smiled. It had been a long time since she left the house like this. As we approached the only store open for business, Sarge slowed a bit. There were people there, though nowhere near as many as the last time we had shopped there. The little market was still in operation, with people milling around, looking at items laid out on blankets in the parking lot. We drove by so fast it was hard to see the offerings, but the animals were easy enough to see. Chickens, a pig, a couple of horses, and some other livestock were in cages or tied to posts.
"You reckon they still have gas?"
Sarge called over the radio.
"I'm sure they do. We can check on the way back," I replied.
Taylor looked over. "We're going to the store on the way back?"
"Yeah, but it ain't like the old days. No big sodas or anything in there now."
"Place looks a little shady to me," Doc said.
"Know what I didn't see?" I asked. Taylor looked over, and I could see Doc look up in the rearview mirror.
"What?"
Doc asked.
"Any DHS guys, did you?"
Doc looked back out the window.
"No, kinda strange."
"Who's the DHS?" Taylor asked.
I had to catch myself. I almost answered, "Dickhead Society." I explained who they were to her, holding back my coarse language, but letting her know my real feelings.
"Aren't they supposed to help us? Isn't that what they are for?"
"In theory," Doc said. "But in reality, they're like the secret police."
"You mean like the brown shirts?"
Doc looked quizzically at her,
then at me. I shrugged. We like history. She knows who they are, I said.
Yeah, just like the brown shirts.
We turned onto Highway 42, and Sarge picked up the speed again. Except for the lack of cars on the road, this little trip seemed so normal. We passed a couple of people walking toward the store, and occasionally saw people sitting outside their homes. Smoke rose from every house that had a chimney or stack. The fireplace or wood stove was a valuable thing now. Soon, we were passing Clear Lake and turning off the paved road.
Keep your eyes open, Sarge said, as the buggy bounced onto the dirt road.
We crawled along, keeping an eye on the woods on either side. Due to the season and the fact that there was a wildfire here last year, there was almost no underbrush, just the scarred trunks of oaks and sand pines.
Are these cabins nice? Taylor asked.
I smiled and looked over at her. Compared to sleeping in a tent, they are. She smiled back.
Ooh, like camping.
Huh, yeah, camping's fun for a weekend, but as a lifestyle, I'll pass. She looked out the window. I still think it will be fun. You would. You also liked when that hurricane knocked the power out for a week. She started to laugh.
That was fun, too.
You're a weird-ass kid, Doc said, causing me to laugh.
Sarge called over the radio. Doc, we're going to stop up here, so you can check a little girl out.
Roger that.
We ran across them on our first trip out here. The guy said his daughter was pretty ill, I told Doc.
Probably bad water. Kills more people than anything else in the world.
More houses started to come into view. As we passed them, you could sense that they were empty, sitting dark and silent off the road. Ahead, smoke could be seen coming from a lone house. Sarge pulled up into the driveway and stopped at a house with a wraparound porch. On it, I could see a burly older man and a couple of other young guys, probably around Taylor's age.
"How's the youngin?" Sarge asked the older man as he slammed the door shut. "She still ain't doing so well. Mr. Doc?"
"Indeed he is. Point him in the right direction, and I'll take a look at her."
"Come on in, Doc. Amy will take you to her."
Doc went up onto the porch, where he was met by a gaunt-looking blonde woman.
"Remind me of your name, friend?" Sarge asked the man.
The man took a couple steps down and stuck out his hand.
"Name's Chase Fuller. That over there is my son, Chris," he said, nodding over to one of the teenagers.
"Linus Mitchell," Sarge said, as he shook his hand. "And that there's Morgan, Jeff, and Mike," Sarge said, as he pointed each of us out.
We all nodded in acknowledgement of the introductions. Amy led Doc down a hallway and opened a door into a bedroom. There was a poster of Justin Bieber hanging on the wall, and beneath it, a young girl of 12 or 13 was lying in the bed. She was covered with only a sheet and was sweating profusely.
"This is Elizabeth," Amy said, as they entered. Then, looking at the girl, she said, "Elizabeth, this is a doctor. He's come to see you."
Doc went and knelt beside the bed and moved a bucket that contained what could only be watery excrement.
"How long she been like this?" he asked, pulling on a pair of nitrile gloves.
"About a week now."
"Is she drinking anything?"
"Some."
As Doc ran a temporal thermometer across the girl's forehead, he asked,
"What are you giving her?"
"Only thing we have is water."
"Where is it coming from?"
"I think they get it from the creek."
"Are you boiling it?"
"Most times. It's usually really clean, though."
Doc looked at the girl and smiled.
"Hi, Elizabeth. How you feeling?"
The girl looked up at him. He could see the fear in her eyes.
"Bad. I feel like I'm going to die."
Doc took her hand and gave it a light squeeze.
"It may feel like it. We aren't going to let that happen, okay?"
She nodded back at him.
"We're going to give your hand a little pinch. Not trying to hurt you, all right?"
She nodded back at him. Doc pinched the skin on the top of her hand. When he let go, the small fold of skin remained, ever so slowly retracting. Doc's brow wrinkled up, and he looked at Elizabeth with a smile and asked,
"Are you scared of needles?"
"A little."
Doc took an IV set from his bag, opening the plastic bag it was sealed in.
Right now, we really need to use one.
He looked back at Amy.
Mom, can you come over and sit in the bed with her?
Amy moved around the bed and sat down. Elizabeth took her hand.
You just talk to Mom for a minute, and this will be over quick,
he said, as he pulled a bag of ringers out of the pack and connected it to the infusion set. Doc wrapped a wide rubber strap around her arm and started tapping the fold of her arm, looking for a vein. Once he found it, he said,
Hang on, here comes the stick.
He inserted the needle and quickly secured the catheter, keeping it in place with a piece of tape. Doc pulled out a tack and pinned the bag to the wall, then quickly opened the valve to full flow.
That wasn't too bad, was it?
Elizabeth looked over.
Is it done?
Uh-huh. You lie here and get some rest, Doc said.
Then looked at Amy.
Mom, can you come with me for a sec?
Amy told her daughter she would be back soon, and they left the room. Amy followed Doc out to the porch, where everyone else was talking. As they came out, Sarge looked up and asked,
How is she, Doc?
Let's talk down here, Doc said, as he stepped off the porch.
Chase and Amy followed as everyone else moved a little closer.
She's pretty sick, running a high fever. I gave her something for the fever and have her on an IV to get some fluids in her. She is seriously dehydrated. I also gave her something for the diarrhea.
She gonna be all right?
What's wrong with her? Amy asked.
It's not that bad. She probably got something from the water.
Doc paused and looked at Amy and Chase.
Just 'cause it looks clean, doesn't mean it is.
He slung his pack off his shoulder and dug around inside it, coming out with a pill bottle.
Here, give her one of these 3 times a day until they're gone. She'll be fine in a couple of days.
Amy took the pills, looking at the bottle. Chase was looking over her shoulder.
What is it?
That stuff will take care of bacteria and protozoa, Doc said.
You got any soap, Chase? Sarge asked.
No, we've been out of soap. We even went through the abandoned houses and got what was there.
Got any bleach? Doc asked.
We do have some of that, Amy answered.
You need to make sure everyone washes their hands. Since you don't have soap, make a strong bleach solution and have everyone rinse their hands in it before eating. You also need to add some to your drinking water or boil it for about 2 minutes, Doc said.
Amy wrapped her arms around Doc's neck.
I can't thank you enough, she said as tears ran down her face.
Doc tried to peel her off him.
No problem. I'm glad to help. Really, it's okay.
She finally released him, to his obvious relief.
I don't know what we would have done without you.
Just make sure to boil your water. Clean your hands before handling food or water. When that bag is empty, you can take the catheter out and put a Band-Aid on her arm.
Jeff was giggling and leaned over. Guess old Doc isn't the touchy-feely type. With a chuckle, I replied, Looks that way. Even though I didn't know the girl, I knew she was somewhere between Leanne and Little Bit's ages, and I would certainly want all the help in the world I could get for them if they were sick. I went to the truck and pulled out my pack. Nowadays, you didn't go anywhere without a pack and a couple days of supplies. Digging around the bag, I found the small hygiene kit and took out the half bar of soap wrapped in a sandwich bag. Going back over to the group, I tossed the bar to Chase.
It isn't much, but it will help out for now. Next time we come back, I'll bring you more.
Chase handed the bar to Amy.
Appreciate it. You guys headed down to the creek?
I nodded, and Sarge answered him.
These guys are,
jutting a thumb in Mike and Jeff's direction.
Seen anyone around there?
I ain't. Ask them boys, though. They spend more time running around than I do, Chase said,
as he nodded his head toward the three boys sitting on an old wire spool under an oak tree. We all turned to look at them, and like typical teenage boys, they looked at one another nervously, wondering why all the adults were looking at them.
Mike, you and Jeff go over there and see what they know about the area, Sarge said.
Mike and Jeff headed toward the group of kids, who tried hard to act uninterested in their approach.
Hey, guys, Mike said, as he stuck his thumbs under the edge of his body armor.
Sup,
the kid with the skull-knit cap replied.
You guys get down to the creek much?
Sometimes. We go fish and shit.
Ever seen anyone down there Anything weird?
The kid cut a half smile and jutted a thumb at the boy beside him.
Just Arnie here. He's pretty weird.
While Mike was talking to them, I pulled Taylor aside.
You know any of these kids?
Yeah, the one with the skull thingy on his head.
What's he like?
Skater punk. Talks a lot about getting high. I nodded my head, looking in their direction. Mike and Jeff came back over, and we quickly said goodbye and headed back to the vehicles. In short order, we were headed down the road again. Taylor was looking out the window once again, but quickly put it up because of the clouds of dust being kicked up by Sarge. After about a mile, Sarge called on the radio and told me to take the lead. Chapter 9. As they were waiting in line to turn in their trays, Mary asked Jess if she was going to try and see her brother after work today.
Yeah, I didn't get to yesterday.
How's he been? Mary asked, as she set her tray on the stack. Jess shook her head.
Not good. They say he needs treatment they can't provide.
Mary smiled sympathetically and patted Jess on the arm.
Enough with the chit-chat. Back to work, everyone.
Singer was standing at the back of the ATV watching as everyone turned in their trays. Jess and Mary headed back to their saw.
I hate that bitch, Jess said, more to herself than to anyone in particular.
She's a special kind of fucked up, another voice said from behind her. Jess and Mary both turned to look over their shoulder to see a tall woman with short blonde hair and a devious grin on her face. She continued on.
Where do they find these people? Everyone here is an ass.
She sped up a little, so she was beside them and continued.
How long have you guys been here?
A couple of weeks. Jess has been here a little longer than me, Mary said. The woman smiled.
Nice. I'm Fred, by the way.
Mary extended a hand.
Hey, Fred, I'm Mary.
Jess looked at Fred.
Fred? That's different.
My real name's Alexis, but my dad always called me Fred.
Jess laughed. Bet that caused some problems when you were a kid.
Yeah, everyone thought I was a boy till they met me.
When they reached the sawbox, Mary picked up the saw and laid it back into the log they were cutting before lunch. Fred was still chattering away when Mary saw Singer heading their way. In a hushed voice, she said,
Fred, you better go.
Fred looked up and rolled her eyes.
I'll see you guys later.
She paused and looked at the team leader, then back to Jess. In a high-pitched voice, she said,
Is she a good witch or a bad witch?
Mary started to laugh, and Jess replied, Definitely a bad witch. Fred quickly jogged off to where she was working. By the time the team leader passed them, Jess and Mary were hard at work sawing logs. They finished their day without having Singer complain about them. And though they were happy about that, they were both very tired from the extra effort to keep her at bay. Hard physical labor was new to both of them, and with the constant presence of the team leader and the security staff, there was no downtime. They were like an all-seeing eye, and they would quickly descend on anyone not carrying their weight. Work was touted as the road to a new life, after all. The nation needed to be rebuilt, and everyone needed to do their fair share. As they walked back to their cabin, Mary said excitedly,
We get to take a shower tonight.
I know. I so need it after today, too, Jess said. Getting a shower was one of the real luxuries of being in the camp. While the time under the head was limited, the water was very warm, something most people these days simply didn't have. The showers were in a large portable building that was open on all sides, save for small partitions between the shower heads. Once inside the trailer, everyone undressed. After everyone was in position, the water was turned on. There was no individual control of the water. A timer would automatically shut the water off after 7 minutes. Jess was already dressed by the time the water cut off. She wanted to head over to the medical tent to see her brother as soon as possible. Without dropping her dirty laundry off, she headed straight there, humming to herself as she walked along. Once inside the medical tent, she was met by a disinterested-looking man behind a desk. He didn't say anything, so after a couple of seconds of waiting, she said quietly,
excuse me. With a long sigh, he looked up from the papers in front of him.
What?
I'm here to see my brother. Name? He asked, in a labored tone, as he looked back to the sheaf of papers in front of him.
Last name's Reeves?
The young man flipped through the papers, going back to the start a couple of times. After a moment, he stood up and said, "Wait here," and walked off toward the other end of the tent. Jess tried to look down the long structure to see her brother, but the lights were too low for her to see clearly. After what seemed like an eternity, a woman in scrubs came walking back up front. A stethoscope hung around her neck, and she looked tired.
"Jess?" the woman said tentatively.
"Yes, that's me. Is everything okay with my brother?" The nurse pursed her lips tightly, and Jess's stomach hit the floor. The nurse wrung her hands and said, "I'm so sorry. He passed away late last night. We tried everything we could to save him, but his injuries were too severe. I'm very sorry." Jess stood there dumbfounded, unable to form words.
"Are you going to be okay?" the nurse asked.
"Can I see his..." She paused at the thought of what she was about to say.
"Can I see him?"
"I'm sorry, dear, but we don't have the facilities to store them." The nurse paused for a moment as well.
"We have to bury them right away. I'm so sorry. You do understand, don't you?"
Jess slowly nodded her head, and with great effort, she turned and walked out of the tent. Once she made it outside, the tears started rolling down her face. She'd already suffered so much loss that one more death, that of the last living member of her family, was blunted by those that had gone before. She was becoming numb, one of the scariest feelings she had known. Slowly, she made her way back to her tent, making sure to wipe the tears before entering. Inside, Mary was sitting with Donna and Fred, carrying on a lively conversation. Jess went straight to her bunk and fell onto it, covering her head with her pillow. Mary called out to her, asking her to come over. When Jess didn't respond, Mary walked over and plopped down in the bed beside her.
"Hey, girl. Are you all right? How's your brother?"
Jess didn't look up. She just shook her head. For a moment, Mary sat there, smile fading.
"Oh, Jess, I'm so sorry. Is there anything I can do for you?"
Jess simply shook her head, fighting back tears. Mary patted Jess's hand and left her to be alone with her thoughts.
Chapter 10. "I don't trust those kids," Mike said as we walked over to the cabins.
"What do you mean?" Sarge asked.
"I just think they're going to be trouble." We found the cabins as we left them, with one exception. Someone had tried to pry the locks off without success. Mike took one look at it and muttered, "Bet I know who did this." We unloaded all the gear into the cabin as quickly as possible. We needed to make it back to the house to try for a second run. After all the gear was stored, we took a minute to set up the radio, stringing the antenna in a tall pine tree and doing a radio check. Ted answered right away, and the signal was strong and clear.
"How are we going to get that water to be safe to drink?"
"I don't want to get sick like that girl," Jeff said.
"We'll have to boil it for now. We'll make a filter later," Mike said.
"I should have thought of that. I've got the Berkey filter, but it's not going to be big enough for all of us. I have a spare set of filters, and enough buckets that we can make one that will do 5 gallons at a shot," I said.
"That needs to be on the next trip," Sarge said.
As we headed back toward the vehicles, we talked about a plan for the other cabins. For now, we would leave them secured with the locks on them. That way, Mike and Jeff only had to worry about keeping watch over one. If and when we needed to bug out, they would open the other cabins for us. We set up a schedule for radio contacts throughout the day. If they had any trouble, they were to call, and we would do likewise.
"If you guys think of anything you need, holler at Ted. We'll make sure to bring it on the next trip," Sarge said.
The guys nodded, and we hopped in our vehicles to head back to the neighborhood.
"I want to come stay here. It looks fun," Taylor said.
"It would be an experience, that's for sure."
This was a common phrase I used on the girls. I once asked them if they knew what an experience was, and I told them that an experience is what you get when you didn't get what you wanted. By that definition, they were getting loads of experience in this new world. She just smiled at me and went back to looking out the window. As we passed Chase's place, there was no sign of anyone outside. The rest of the trip was uneventful, and once we got back, there was another pile of gear ready to go. Everyone pitched in, and it was loaded in no time. I told Sarge that I was going to go and get the filter ready, and we could head out as soon as it was ready. I told Taylor I'd be right back, and ran home on Danny's Polaris. I went into the store and found the spare filters and the parts kit for the Berkey. The kit contained all the gaskets and grommets needed for the filters and a replacement spigot. Little Bit popped her head into the shop.
"What you doing, Daddy?"
"Gonna make a water filter for the guys down in the creek."
"Can I help?"
"Sure." Grabbing an empty 5-gallon food-grade bucket, I cut most of the top off the lid, leaving enough of a rim so that a bucket could sit on top of it. Next, I needed to drill the holes for the filters.
"Can I do it?"
Little Bit asked excitedly, hopping up and down on one foot. "You can help." Using a cordless drill, we drilled 4 holes into the bottom of the second bucket, with her squeezing the trigger and me holding on to make sure it didn't bind up. Next, we inserted the filter elements through the holes with one of the rubber washers on either side and a plastic wing nut on the bottom. To finish, we drilled a hole through the side about an inch from the bottom and attached the spigot.
"That was fun. I like to work," she said.
I smiled at her. We could now pour the top bucket full, and it would filter into a second bottom one. Having the black Berkey elements in this assembly would take out anything harmful and would filter thousands of gallons of water. Setting the buckets with the filters inside the other, I strapped them to the rack on the Polaris with a couple of bungee cords and climbed on to leave. As we were just about to leave, Danny and Bobby stopped by with the Suburban and waved. Bobby stuck her head out the window.
"Tell Mel and Leanne to come out."
Little Bit ran back in the house to get them, and a few minutes later, Mel and Leanne hopped in the back. Little Bit hopped back on the Polaris, and we got in line behind the Suburban. The load on Danny's trailer looked as full as the first trip, but when we pulled up to the barn, we could see that Sarge's trailer was empty.
"What are we doing here?"
"Looks like you got a full load already," I said, as I helped Little Bit get off. Danny replied, "Sarge wants to get a couple of the hogs moved out to the river as well." I looked at the barn, then back to him.
"And how the hell are we going to do that?"
"Catch them and tie them up. Toss them in the trailer and take them," Reggie said. I thought about it for a second. "Makes sense, I guess. Are we going to pen up against the river?"
"Yeah, taking that solar hot wire," Reggie said.
"It still works?" I asked.
"Yeah, want to test it?"
Danny and I laughed at the same time.
"No, I'll take your word for it. Thanks, though."
We walked toward the barn, where Sarge, Ted, and Doc were looking over the side of one of the pens. All the girls were gathered around the picnic table, talking, when Sarge turned and called out to them.
"You two biggins, come over here."
Leanne and Taylor looked at me quizzically. I shrugged, and we walked over to him. Sarge pointed into the pen.
"You two, get in there, and catch us a couple of them hogs."
The girls were horrified. They looked at one another, and Leanne asked,
"Dad?"
"Sorry, guys. Don't look to me for help," I said with a smile. They looked back at Sarge, who was as straight-faced as a gambler.
"Come on, get in there. They ain't gonna eat you."
They were not convinced.
"Come on, I'll help."
Sarge opened the pen door and waited. They weren't budging.
"Come on, let's catch some pigs," I said,
and headed for the pen. They reluctantly followed.
"I can catch a pig," Little Bit shouted.
"Just wait. Let's see if your sisters can first," I said. The process of catching the pigs was filled with squeals and shrieks. The pigs added their own complaints to the racket. At first, the girls were very reluctant to grab them, but after I climbed in, we cornered one. Grabbing it by the hind leg, I told Taylor to grab the other. It took her a minute, but she did, and we pulled it out. Sarge showed them how to loop the rope around their hocks and what sort of knot to tie. Those who weren't involved in the wrangling were leaned over the pen laughing and shouting. For a few minutes, we were removed from the reality of our situation. It felt good to laugh. Once the pigs were loaded into Sarge's trailer, Mel and Bobby asked to go see the cabins. They said if they were going to have to live there, they wanted to see the place first. After a few minutes, we decided the girls would go with Danny, Sarge, and I. Once again, Sarge would lead the way with Danny, and Bobby riding with them. At first, Bobby didn't understand why they needed a ride in the buggy with Sarge, and he explained to them that it was for security. She shuddered a bit. This was one of the first times in a while that the girls had been outside of our neighborhood. As we drove up to the corner store, Sarge turned off the road into the parking lot. "What are we doing here?" Mel asked.
"I have no idea, but we're about to find out."
I pulled up beside him to ask what he was doing. He said he wanted to see if they had any gas that we could trade for, and asked me if I knew who was running the show. An old woman soon came out of the store, giving us the stink eye. I nodded toward her. "I think you found the ringleader of this circus." The boys she paid for security were watching Sarge carefully as he approached the woman. "How y'all doing today?" he said, nodding at her and her detail.
"Fair to middling," the old lady replied.
"You got any gas left in them tanks?"
"Gas, we got gas. What you trading?"
"Well, what are you taking?"
"Beans and bullets, mostly."
"How many of each do you need for 50 gallons of gas?" The old woman rubbed her chin, looking from side to side.
"I don't know. That's a lot of gas."
"I'll tell you what, we got to run down the road and drop this stuff off. We'll be coming back. How about you think on it for a while and tell me what you need?"
"All right, I'll think on it."
Sarge turned and started to walk back toward the vehicles, but after a few steps, he stopped. He took off his hat and made a show of scratching his head and said to the old woman,
"How about a live hog?"
The old woman squinted an eye again.
"You got live pigs?"
"We got a couple." As the old woman's tongue ran over her sunken lips, Sarge knew he had her.
"How big are them hogs?"
"Come look for yourself," he said, gesturing toward the vehicles. The group walked over to Sarge's buggy, where he pointed at the trussed-up hogs lying in the trailer.
"Big enough?"
The old woman looked at the boys with her. Their faces gave it away. Fresh meat right in front of them. The old woman's eyes darted back and forth from the hogs to Sarge. He knew it was time to make his play.
"Tell you what, I got one that's bigger than these ones. How about I bring by that one and 5 pounds of pinto beans, 'cause Lord knows you can't eat beans without some fat back in 'em. For say, 75 gallons of gas?"
The old woman looked at him.
"You say it's bigger than these?"
Sarge nodded.
"All right, it's a deal."
The old woman stuck her hand out, and Sarge shook it. "We'll be back later this evening with your hog."
"And my beans,"
the old woman said with a smile. The old woman and her boys turned back to the store. As Sarge walked past me, he smiled.
"Not a bad trade, huh? One hog and some beans for 75 gallons of gas."
I raised my eyebrows. "Not a bad trade at all." We pulled back on Highway 42 and continued into the forest. The ride was quiet. Mel and the girls seemed to be enjoying getting away from home. We turned off on the dirt road by Chase's house, and as we passed by, we could see the teenage boys sitting in the porch. As we rode by, they looked up, obviously bored as hell. Mel turned to the girls in the back and asked if they knew them. She got the same answer Taylor had given me earlier, that they were stoners and losers. Jeff and Mike were hard at work when we arrived, sort of. Both of them had been down at the river fishing and had fish laid out on the ground in front of them. When we pulled up, they laid the rods down and came to help unload.
"Nice to see you two enjoying yourselves," Sarge barked as they walked up.
"Gotta eat, you know," Mike said. Sarge gave him the hairy eyeball. How's the fishing?
Pretty good, actually. A lot of fish out there, Jeff said.
Good. Leave some for the rest of us. Let's get to work.
Mel, Bobby, and the girls went into the cabin to check it out. The interiors of the cabins were very simple. Bare plywood floors and walls made for a dreary feel.
Hey, this is cool,
Little Bitch shouted as she came through the door. Mel and Bobby were standing, taking it all in.
What do you think? Bobby asked.
Wouldn't be my first choice, Mel answered.
You know how hard it's going to be to do anything without a table, Bobby said.
We can do it like the Japanese do and sit on the floor, Taylor said with a smile.
I'm not Japanese, Bobby slapped her knees, and these old knees don't like to crawl around on the floor.
Looking around, Leanne asked, Where's the bathroom?
It's called a hole outside, Mel answered.
Leanne wrinkled her nose.
It smells like the cabins at my summer camp, Leanne said.
Bobby leaned close to Mel.
It smells like bum ass.
Mel laughed.
Really? And how would you have a frame of reference?
Mel and Bobby walked to the front of the cabin.
At least the view is nice, Bobby said.
Yeah, but can you imagine what the mosquitoes will be like in the summer?
Bobby ran a hand over the screen in the window.
Thankfully, there are screens.
Mel looked around. Just the thought of being stuck out here. No running water, no bathroom. She waved her hand in the air.
This isn't a house.
I don't know what to call it, really.
It's still better than sleeping in a tent, Bobby said gently.
Well, if we do come, make sure to bring all the bug spray you can find. Mel pointed to the ceiling.
Look at all the spider webs.
Bobby looked up.
At least they'll eat all the other bugs.
Mel looked back at the three girls, who were working out who would sleep where, and said to Bobby with pursed lips,
I hope we don't have to bug out. Living here would take a lot of getting used to.
I left the ladies to chat more about the house, hoping Bobby could warm Mel up to the idea of coming here in an emergency. Outside, I drove some of the PVC pipe into the ground to make a makeshift pen and wrapped it with the wire. Danny set up the hot wire, and we unloaded the hogs into the pen, all tied up. Now we had a problem. The hot wire was off, and as soon as we untied the hogs, they were sure to try to run. So the hot wire needed to be on before we untied them, which meant whoever was inside the pen would have to try to get out without getting shocked. Mike volunteered to do it, as he was sure he could jump over the top strand. Once he stepped in, Danny turned the hot wire on, and Mike started to cut the hogs loose.